This is Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on TNT.
Yes, TNT. Today's news talk, or trinitrotoluene. If you're a chemist who likes putting explosives together, that's what the chemical name for TNT or dynamite is, trinitrotoluene. And I like to say this sometimes, but I remember when Mike Ryan, God bless him, first talked to me about setting up TNT nearly 3 years ago now. The discussions were bandied about. He said, yeah, going to start up a talk radio thing and I'm going to call it TNT. And to be honest with you, that's where I stopped thinking about it. And I thought, TNT, what an amazing name. Named after the AC/DC classic, of course. And I thought, well, if he's doing it, I'm in. If nothing else, because of the name. I just love that name. But anyway, enough of me waffling on. This is Monday, the 15th of April, 2024. We got an absolute cracker start to the show with Gemma, also with Robert Olds, and of course, a great breakdown on what's happening in the Middle East with Basil. Basil is super knowledgeable, and I believe his delivery is fantastic when it comes to talking about these hot topics, especially stuff that's going on in the Middle East. But we still have plenty more to come in this second hour. We're going to be talking to Gemma Cooper again as I bring up some wind, very subtly trying to disguise it here. I'm still coming off the tail end of feeling a little bit peaky myself last weekend, but these things pass. These things pass like bad weather. They don't stay forever, and let's just divert and let's have a little bit of motivational life lesson here. Listen, doesn't matter how bad the storm is. It doesn't matter how black that sky is. It doesn't matter how hard that rain is falling. It doesn't matter how hard that wind is blowing. No storm lasts forever. Okay? They all pass eventually. No hurricane blows forever. No tidal wave crashes forever. They all pass in time. So we've just got to ride out the storms, as it were. And what better place to ride out a storm than on the good ship TNT, I tell you what, the waves have bashed us over the last few years. The wind has blown us over the last few years. Hell, some torpedoes have even been launched our way from some unscrupulous characters. But guess what? Guess what? The good ship TNT is still navigating the turbulent waters of life. And thankfully, all you lovely people are still on board. Let's see what's on the news this morning. The largest office building in St. Louis in America has just sold for $3.5 million, as per a report in the Wall Street Journal. So what, you might be thinking, well, in 2006, the same building sold for $205 million. So if you talk about negative equity, I wouldn't want to be the guy or the girl or the group of people that forked out $205 million for that place in 2006. It's currently changing hands for 3.5. That's a tasty $201.5 million loss on that building over the last, 18 years. And they say property only goes up in price. Don't believe that. Don't believe the hype. Okay, it can go up as well as down, as we're seeing here. A victory has been claimed for a group of Swiss women who claim that the Swiss government violated their human rights by its climate inaction and will have ramifications for other nations. Imagine that. A group of women, could have been men, it doesn't really matter who brought the case, have got a victory and said their rights have been violated by the government refusing to take action to combat climate change. Unbelievable. The wishy-washy, snowflakey society that we are living in at the minute, that a case like that could even get to a court, let alone these women are found to have been their rights breached for a lack of activity on the Swiss government's part when it came to addressing climate change. And like the headline says, could have ramifications for other nations down the line. No doubt it will. This will be used as a test case for other chancellors to come forward. Remember Greta Thunberg talking about how the government had stole her childhood? Oh, they've stolen my childhood. They've destroyed a whole generation. And someone did a meme with some kid, African kid in Democratic Republic of Congo, up to their knees in slime, digging out cobalt rocks by hand from some pit whilst being mercilessly beaten and starved by their handler for about 10 cents a day to make the cobalt or put the cobalt in Greta's mobile phone. What an absolute whinger she is. And she's still on the stage. She's getting arrested more frequently now. I think it's just a desperate attempt to remain relevant these days. She's not just the little climate goblin that she used to be. So yeah, there's that story as well. You know what? We'll take a break. We'll bring Jem in, and then I have a story here because we've talked a lot, her and I, about Irish hospitals. There's an absolute cracker here from a doctor, an actual doctor who had to go to an Irish hospital as an inpatient. And I quote, he said he spent 4 days in an emergency department and said the experience was like, quote, a form of torture, unquote, to him. So straight from the horse's mouth here, as reported in the Irish media just over the weekend. So we'll talk about that when we come back here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
Keeping the commitment.
I love you guys.
Unbelievable.
24/7.
Listen to you every day, have for years.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know, as I'm thinking about this, Jem, I'm secretly hoping that your little malaise doesn't progress. It gets better, not worse, because we don't want you to have to go through what this poor old Irish doctor went through here. I know you're feeling a little bit peaky, and I hope you're going to improve in your health over the next few days. But this is a chap called Mick Molloy, Dr. Mick Molloy, an Irish sounding name, if ever there was one. He spent 4 days on an emergency department trolley. He said it was effectively a form of torture, and he still hasn't fully recovered to this day. It follows a protest against absolutely horrendous conditions at University Hospital Limerick. There it is again, Gemma, the most overcrowded hospital in the country. So speaking on the hard shoulder, Dr. Molloy, an Irish medical organization consultant, said his experience at an unspecified emergency department, so he didn't name the name of the hospital. My money's on University Hospital Limerick, but that's just me speculating, said the experience will last there forever. He said, I was 4 days. There were no beds in the hospital to be admitted into. It occurred over a bank holiday weekend. I was seen morning and evening by medical teams in charge. There were no staffing issues. The hospital was just too full to move people from emergency departments to wards. He said his stay was incredibly difficult. He didn't get any sleep. The lights are on constantly. It's a working environment 24/7. There's drunk people, there's violent people, and that's just the doctors he's talking about. So not somewhere that you would want to be spending your bank holiday weekend, Jim, I would imagine.
Well, it's funny, you know, the parallels. There's a story doing the rounds about a great grandmother today, 78-year-old from the south of England. She was admitted to a UK hospital on Good Friday, and she was on a trolley for 4 days and ended up having to have her leg amputated as a result because there was no one to see her. That's what her family are claiming. I haven't delved too deeply in that story. I mentioned it earlier in the day with Sonia Poulton and David Curtin, but it just is the shocking indictment, isn't it, of health services across the UK and Ireland. You know, we talk a lot about the NHS generally and health services in the Republic of Ireland generally, but this is the actual impact on individuals and families and the distress. I mean, you go in to A&E in good faith and you come out without a leg because there's no one to see you. I mean, it's really awful state of affairs. And for a doctor to be coming out and saying it was like torture, doctors are usually pretty stalwart creatures. They see a lot and they deal with a lot. So for a doctor to be saying that, the question is, of course, you know, will those in authority responsible for this, using our money to pay for this, will they pay attention? That's we just want them to see what is going on and do something about it. You know, as simple as that.
It is. And just to round this one off, I mean, this guy's claiming that staffing wasn't an issue. There was a story that we actually covered last week where they say staffing was an issue. They had the machines, their radiography machines, but they didn't have anybody operate them. Now, what this guy's saying here, interestingly, is there was an extra 41% of staff put into University Hospital Limerick. But the Irish, being the Irish, Gemma, it's not a question of staffing in that place. It's a question of space. There is no capacity to put the patients. So throwing more staff into an already overcrowded environment is just going to make the environment even more chaotic and overcrowded. It's not magicking up beds and it's not building new wards on. They're throwing more staff into a place that needs more facilities for people to sleep, and the places that are understaffed, they're adding more equipment in there, and they've got no one to operate them. You know, that's Ireland for you.
Well, I mean, my heart goes out to anyone that has to use healthcare services in the UK or Ireland at the moment. It really isn't fit for purpose. It's been broken for a while. And many, many people wanting it to be the number one election issue, whether it will be or not, as we seem to be hurtling towards a third world war. I don't know. But I mean, it's the human cost, isn't it? It's the human cost. You go in, you're distressed, you're suffering, you feel terrible. And you end up being, you know, coming out feeling worse than when you went in, which is not the aim of the health service. But as we know, everything is inverted in our culture, isn't it? There's a few headlines actually talking about parallels. You know, at the top of the last hour, we were talking about the EV market plummeting in Ireland and globally. In the last hour, Tesla has announced it's going to lay off 10% of its global workforce, possibly 20%, as demand continues to plummet in what many commentators are saying is an ever competitive market. I don't know about competitive. I mean, it's the bottom's falling out of it. But Elon Musk has said in a trade magazine today, it's the thing he hates doing the most, laying off staff. But it's the only way to ensure the company's survival. He's thanked everyone for their efforts, but absolutely job losses, thousands of job losses globally in Tesla, which you could have argued was the leading EV brand, couldn't you? And that's broken since we last spoke. Also, airlines have suspended flights, unsurprisingly, to the Middle East. This could affect people who wanted to travel, say, to Dubai because of the Iran-Israel incident at the weekend. Some will resume tomorrow, not many. A lot of them, like EasyJet, have suspended them right the way through until next Sunday, where they said they'll review the situation. So as well as oil prices being affected, we've now got international flights, which have been stopped. And Rwanda is back on the agenda in the House of Commons today, the controversial Rwanda bill to deport asylum seekers to the African country. Other countries have been mooted as well if this scheme is successful, but it's emerged today. Leaked documents show that the actual Rwanda whole scheme itself could cost us $5 billion in 5 years. That's $1 billion a year. And it comes the day after another record number of boats, people on small boats across the channel. 534 made their way over yesterday to the English coastline. That's the highest ever so far. So the government does understand it does need to act on this. Whether Rwanda is the right thing to do or not, who knows? But we might see it made law by the end of this week, Rick.
534 just yesterday. And when you think, if we do get better weather, or certainly less wintry weather here, those numbers will continue to increase going into the so-called British summertime as well. So much for stopping the boats, stopping the small boats. We're going to stop them. We're going to eradicate them. It's just complete bunkum coming from the British government as usual. And just a little bit of research here, just while you were talking, you talked about Tesla laying off 10% of their workers as well. Their share price, and just brought up their share price here, over the last 6 months has went down by a whopping 33%. So Tesla stock was trading at $2.50 6 months ago. The current price today, as we speak, is $1.71. So a 33% drop in stock price for Tesla there too. Linking in with that story from a 40% drop in the Irish EV market as well. And that's just Ireland, Gemma. Certainly. And, I believe if you want to drive an EV, you should do it. We have a problem, of course, with when we're told that that's what we have to drive and this is the only way forward. But that push and that dystopianism and that crazy totalitarian dream of theirs is certainly unraveling. And for that, I am very, very grateful. So, yeah, we'll take those wins as and when we find them. Gemma, you are now relieved to go fill up the hot water bottle, crawl under the duvet with a piece of soggy, lukewarm toast and a bottle of Lemsip or something else stronger you can down to get yourself through the day. And hopefully you'll be feeling a little bit better and we'll have you back tomorrow. What say ye?
Yes, that's the plan. Without a doubt, that's the plan. Yes, thank you, Rick.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much, Gemma, for all your input this morning. We've got to take a break now, and then I'm going to welcome Niall Fraser onto Locked and Loaded for the first time. So stay tuned for more here on TNT, today's news talk.
TNT's Patrick Henningsen.
Joe Biden's a bit of an anomaly in that respect. Normally, the incumbent is running a lot stronger going into the second term or the re-election bid. That's not the case with Joe Biden. We see a lot of people fleeing from his support base, even from his own party, which is unusual. And there's a lot of good reason for that on the foreign policy side, which we'll be discussing throughout this program, but also domestically as well. They haven't been able to tackle inflation. in the United States, and that's a big problem. So this isn't, voters they're not caring anymore about COVID. They don't care anymore about vaccine mandates. As we've said before, this mainly is going to be, it's going to come down to being three things: gas, groceries, and World War III.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Now we're talking. Turn it up.
TNT.
Yes, indeed, TNT, today's News Talk. Happy to be talking this morning with Niall Fraser. Niall is a political activist and also a member of the Scottish Family Party. And boy, oh boy, is there a lot going on in Scotland at this point in time. Niall, never a dull moment up in Scotland at this time, or am I overlooking into things? Am I overreading things, or is it just really quiet up there and there's not really a lot to talk about?
Well, actually, I mean, it's rather dull up here in terms of weather, but in terms of actual activity and political activity, it's never a dull day, like you're saying. It's never, ever a dull day up here. So in terms of the hate crime bill, it's just coming into force on April 1st. And to be fair, the first scalp that I've seen taken from this has been a 74-year-old woman. I don't know if you've seen this story, Rick, but a 74-year-old woman was the victim of a malicious complaint by a neighbour. A neighbour said she's been in her garden cutting a rose bush or something like that. She said she's called her a name. The police arrive at this 74-year-old woman's door. They then say, we're going to have to take you to the police station. This won't be a situation where we'll be able to talk to you in your home about it. So she goes in the van. She goes to Kilmarnock Police Station. She removes all her jewellery, all her devices. And really, this old woman's put through the ringer purely because one person's made a spurious complaint. So this is sort of the future that Scotland has in the road down the line, sort of.
Well, tell me this, Niall. It's not so long ago that I was talking about headlines from Scotland saying that the Scottish police force could no longer investigate certain types of crime because they didn't have enough people to look at them. Mm-hmm. And unless there was concrete evidence or video evidence of something having taken place, the Scottish police wouldn't even investigate certain crimes. That was only a few months ago. Now, looking at the fallout of this business from the 1st of April, when this hate crime law came into force in Scotland, ironically, on April Fool's Day, the lines or the complaint lines have been swamped with people reporting the First Minister, accusing him of being a racist, so much so that the police have actually been given a script to read out to people because so many people are complaining. I take it he hasn't been brought into a station, Kilmarnock, or some Scottish Highland station, told to remove his jewellery, hand over his devices, and undergo questioning, unlike this old 74-year-old old granny.
Absolutely not, Rick. I mean, it's funny you can make that that prediction that that's not happened. So what's actually occurred is the police have immediately come to Hamza's defence and they've immediately said, actually, Hamza's white speech was not in any way a racist, or it doesn't trigger the Hate Crime Act. So that's then pushed aside. And then they're given a script. So it was just like a call centre has like a sales script. Hello, customer. Please press option 1, 2, 3, or 4. This is the sort of situation that Police Scotland has landed itself in. It's so bizarre and fantastical at the same time that it's more to the point that physical crimes are totally being they're not being investigated. Or they're not even attempting to investigate them, and yet they've said at the same time we're going to investigate every single hate crime, and unless it's Hamza Youssef, You know, he doesn't get put on what's called a non-crime reporting list or a list of people who have these hate incidents, but they're then not investigated. They just show up on some sort of enhanced disclosure check that can affect your sort of professional life. But I mean, for this old woman to be put through the ringer because somebody's made a spurious complaint, in the law, it actually states that the complainer is automatically given victim status, which is again, the onus of proof is not there.
Well,
let me ask you a rabbit hole up here in Scotland.
Let me ask you a question, okay? So since this was introduced, now it's now been 2 weeks. Actually, today's the second anniversary, so it's the 15th of April from the first. There's been scorn poured upon this business from on high, from so many different places, okay? It's almost a farce. The way this was launched, the way that it's been handled, the case in which you have brought to my attention this morning about this old lady of 74, it's farcical and it's ridiculous. You would think that in a position like that, the government would start trying to rethink what they've done, maybe start to subtly backpedal a little bit from this. But that doesn't seem to be the modus operandi of these treacherous governments that we have. I'm thinking as well about, you know, the 20 mile an hour speed limit that was introduced in Wales. That was just universally lambasted, universally hated. More people signed a petition to have it removed than actually voted for Mark Drakeford to actually be put into power at the last election in Wales. And it was completely dismissed. Do you think, in your humble opinion, that there will be a doubling down in this nonsense, even though nothing adds up, nothing stacks up, it's a complete drain on resources and it's nonsensical? Can you see the Scottish government doubling down on this rather than holding their hands up and saying, hey, we might just have got this one wrong?
So just going with the sort of track record of the Scottish government here, they have no intention of backing down from this. This, again, Hamza Youssef was the Justice Secretary when this, he was the architect of this hate crime bill back when it was being formed. And now he's First Minister. He was warned of the implications and the effects of this bill when he was creating it 2 or 3 years ago. Now that it's been implemented, of obviously all these warnings that he was given prior to it coming into effect have all happened, have all transpired. But he's never going to back down for this because, again, like you know as well, Rick, it's more of an agenda than it is really try to reduce hate. It's got nothing to do with reducing hate. And in fact, we've had like 9,000 complaints, I think, so far, which has been more than the last 6 or 7 years combined in 1 week.
Yeah, and the question again has to be asked, well, how can they possibly keep up with those levels of complaints that are coming in? Now, of course, I believe a lot of people are flooding that system to show what an absolute farce that this is, especially with the amount of complaints that have been made against Humza. But for example, another headline story that came out. In fact, what we'll do is now we've got to take a little news headline break. We'll do it now. And when we come back at the other side, look at the state of Scottish policing at the minute. On the backdrop of all this added burden, administrative burden that's now being put upon them with this introduction of these new hate crime laws. So we'll be right back in 30 seconds here. Don't go away. This is TNT, today's news talk.
We have some wonderful news for you.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps of Iran announced that it had launched 300 drones and missiles at Israel on Saturday, originating from both Iran and the locations of its regional proxies. This assault, which Israel claims was largely thwarted with 99% of the projectiles intercepted by Israeli, U.S., and allied forces, represents the first direct military strike by Iran on Israel.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, now another headline that caught my attention over the weekend here has to do with Scottish police officers. Some of them have said that they feel vulnerable, quote unquote, due to staffing. This is coming from a police watchdog. So many frontline officers say current staffing levels in their areas are making them feel vulnerable and at times unsafe. HM Inspectorate of Constabulary in Scotland reviewed Police Scotland's wellbeing provision and found staffing levels were a prominent concern for officers. So here we have again the HMICS saying that there aren't enough officers on the ground. It's causing a lot of stress among officers. They don't feel safe. They don't feel supported. They feel a little bit vulnerable. And yet, at the same time, we have a huge resource diverted away from the front line to deal with these nonsensical guilty until proven innocent allegations that are being thrown around to do with hate speech. How could they get it so wrong?
Well, it's almost like they're getting it wrong on purpose. All the social services here in Scotland are at their absolute limit. And that does not exclude the police. The police are stretched beyond any measure. And to then implement this further hate crime bill that, again, like you're saying, it extracts so much resources for the police. It's unbelievable, especially when they've said, they've promised they're going to investigate every single one. And just as a sort of instance, the party leader that I'm in, the Scottish Family Party, he got all his information for the police to see what information they held on him, disclosure check. And what happened was they've went through a hate check of his, and the actual police, the PC in charge of his complaint, had to go and view a video of his. He had to go and sit at a desk and sit there and watch a video for 15 minutes and then take notes. So that's one police officer, one hate crime report, 15 minutes out of his day. It's the police. I think I read the support that you mentioned the other day. The staffing levels, sicknesses are through the roof. They're taking lots of time off to do with just the job in general. The stress is getting to the police. The relationship between the public and the police is at an all-time low. So already they're dealing with a public that is automatically 90% going to be against them. So there just seems to be a sliding down the scale of the reputation of the police here in Scotland. They're not really trusted to deliver justice, really. And this is exactly what you want for the police, right? But, you know, I said... at a speech recently, the police almost seem like they don't want to protect their communities anymore. And I think that this hate crime bill may be the end of the police. It's going to stretch it beyond breaking point. It is already stretched, but this additional workload is probably going to put them right over the edge into sort of collapse, Rick.
Here's the thing. I mean, a lot of cops, there's a hierarchy there. You come in as a cop, you're a constable, you're under a sergeant, the sergeant's under the inspector, under the detective inspector, a superintendent. And, you know, you have a pecking order in the cops, the same as there's a pecking order in the army. And when you're a private in the army or you're a lance corporal, you don't question what the sergeant tells you to do. That's just the way the structure is. And then he takes his orders from the captain, who takes his orders from a lieutenant, who takes his orders from a general, and so on and so forth. There's no way that these cops in Scotland, all of them, are happily partaking in this madness that's going on there. I am sure now, and I mean, like, obviously I'm just speaking from my own opinion here, but I'm sure so many of them are shaking their heads when they're dispatched out. For example, can you imagine being the cop that sent the arrest the 74-year-old woman on hearsay to take her in the back of a van, to take her possessions away, to formally caution her, maybe to take a statement, thinking to yourself as a cop, good grief, there's so many more things I need to be doing to help make Scotland a better place than arresting a granny. But yet they have to toe the line because that's the hierarchy of the police in there. I think that's what's leading to a lot of despondency with the police as well, right across the board. They couldn't all be willing participants in this. And people say, well, if you don't like it, quit your job. Maybe that's all they have. They have a mortgage to pay, they have kids to feed. They're doing what they think is right. But deep down inside, they can't be happy knowing what they're doing is complete bunkum.
You're spot on. And this is the sort of... this is the thing I'm trying to capture as well, is the spirit in the police that's actually saying, hold on a minute, I do not want to be going and arresting somebody's gran for somebody's, maybe a word she's said. And It's what you're mentioning there about the hierarchies. What's transpired in this report about the police is that the actual, I mean, people used to sit or go into a career in the police that would last 16, 20 years. And that would foster a good working relationship. You would understand the hierarchies. Now the average time is almost 6 years. Mm-hmm. So this, it shows you the sort of turnover in the police that's happening is it's totally different from what it used to be. It used to be you were in the police almost for an entire year, your whole career. You would join the police and you'd be there your entire life. Now it's, you know, on average 6 years. So the turnover is just getting more and more intense. And that can only be due to the stress the work brings, the sort of the fact that maybe not getting paid enough, they're overworked. And to a lesser extent as well, they don't actually want to be conducting the work that they're supposed to be doing. So it is, it's a tough time for the police. I do feel for them at the same time, but you know, I would hope that they do not want to be Hamza's dogs, basically, Hamza's political army. And this is where when there seems to be a rise in sentiment in the police that they do not want to be policing this hate crime bill. And they know that the writing's on the wall if this continues.
Well, I think now that's reflected in a way in the figures that you give me there, the average turnover time, you know, 16 to 20 years in the past for a cop. Now it's 6 years. So that business, well, if you don't like it, you can always find yourself another profession. I think that's actually what's happening at the minute. Yeah. And you're just talking about Scotland there too. The Irish Gardaí, the police force in the Republic of Ireland, they're having a terrible time at the minute trying to recruit and retain staff. The recruitment bit's not so difficult because they usually dangle a big financial carrot in front of people's noses and you've got a career for life, good pension, bloody, bloody, blah. But when you hit the ground and then you start to try and have to enforce these and get so much negative public sentiment, all of a sudden that pension and that decent pay doesn't seem so attractive anymore. And therefore, you're seeing a lot more people quitting the force. And of course, there's a lot of good people. There's a lot of bad eggs in the police, like every profession, but there's a lot of good people in there too, and they're the ones that are quitting en masse, unfortunately. And then that leaves a gap in our societies that we're not getting the policing and the continued loss of trust, and round it goes. Listen, I'd love to talk to you a little bit longer about this, but I can't because we're out of time. But what I will do is just direct people your way if I can. So if you don't already do so, check out the Scottish Family Party on X or Twitter, and Niall's page is at Niall Fraser 8, number That's 8, and the Scottish Family Party is at Scott Fam Party, all one word there. You'll be able to see what those guys are at. And maybe if we talk again, actually, we'll focus in on the Scottish Family Party and what you guys are doing and what you guys are all about and the difference that you guys are trying to bring about in Scotland. So now, big thanks to you for hopping on this morning. Lovely to see you again. And I've got to take a break now, and then I'll be welcoming Catherine McBean on. And she's going to be talking about what's going on over our heads right now. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's a chemtrail. Or is it? Yes, we're going to be looking at that on the other side. Don't go away.
Have a good one. Thanks very much for your time, Nick. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Niall. Cheers, mate. I'll be right back here on TNT.
People might tell you that Lyme doesn't kill people, but we are losing people. People disappear from their lives.
One of the scariest things that I had to deal with was memory loss. Not just like I don't remember what I did last week, but like I forgot all the words to my own songs. I remember going to my primary care physician and he was like, you are 100% healthy, there's nothing wrong with you. And my response was, that's impossible, I'm dying.
I wasn't working, so I had all of these hospital bills. We had to move out of our home and move into my parents' basement.
I just wish I could have truly been present in those big moments, you know, when she took her first steps or, you know, her first day of preschool. Lyme is such a thief, and it goes undetected because no one is looking for it.
For more information and prevention tips, go to projectlyme.org.
Hi. I'm your retirement fear. But don't be scared. You're still in pre-retirement.
Does that mean I have more time to plan?
Precisely. Here, this is pretirement.org.
Retirement savings options? Potential tax breaks?
Ooh.
This isn't scary. I'm doing it.
You got this.
Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan.
In a secret lab, somewhere in the Western Hemisphere, the perfect human specimen has been born. He has the strength of 10 men and the wisdom of 20.
Rick Munn.
Now you listen here. He's a very naughty boy.
TNT Radio.
Now go away.
No, don't go away just yet. Don't go away just yet. We've still got plenty more to come here before the top of the hour. I'm very happy to be joined again by the one and only Catherine McBean. Catherine is founder of the People's Food and Farming Alliance. And I would say she's a concerned individual. She's a passionate individual, but she's a concerned individual. There's a lot of shenanigans and skullduggery going on, Catherine, and not just on the ground level in the Houses of Parliament. But I joked before you came on, you know, if you take a look up to the sky and what I'm seeing at the minute, I kid you not, it's snowing right now. It's snowing where I am here, and it's the 15th of April. Something's a little bit off with the weather, don't you think?
Yeah. No, it is. It is. I mean, I've been shouting about this for over 10 years now. I found it about 10 years ago when I was down a Monsanto rabbit hole, and you know where that goes. And I was introduced to it by a local guy who happened to be a scientist, postdoctoral scientist from a big university in the UK, where he was studying climate science. And he suddenly is looking at all of this going, there's a missing part here. Something's not right. Something's not right. And so he stumbled, if you like, across geoengineering, climate science, whatever you want to call it. And started to put the pieces together and held a local meeting. How these things happen, only the Lord knows. And I went to his first ever meeting, and it hadn't even been on my radar. And I then volunteered with him for a little bit as time allowed to look at the samples of rainwater. I spoke with agronomists and arboriculturalists and tree surgeons who were finding weird metallic residues on the plant or on the tree. And it went from there. And I remember contacting The Guardian and The Telegraph, a number of big mainstream media outlets, and explaining it to them. And I was told I was a conspiracy theorist. And following year, The Guardian did their first piece on solar radiation management, which is fundamentally the same thing. So they've known for a long time. But what we are seeing now, the one joy we can take from this, because believe me, it's impacting farmers, it's impacting anyone who's trying to grow food, let alone human and animal soil health, is the fact that they've been really going for it over the last few days. And as a result of that, a number of people are now looking up and going, hang on a minute, something ain't right here, something's not right. And it's flooded the social media. So it's an absolute joy for me to see people becoming increasingly aware of it.
And the other thing is, I'm going to be honest with you this morning because I like to try and be honest with my guests. Many, many years ago, I heard this term chemtrails, and there was people banging on about chemtrails. And I know there's a difference between contrails, condensation trails, and actually chemical trails. There is a difference. They're not the same thing. But I just dismissed it as being, these people need to stop smoking whatever they're smoking and drinking whatever they're drinking. They're not spraying us. There's no conspiracy going on. But listen, as time has went by, you know, people start scratching their heads right across the board, and they come around that there's something not quite right. And even this morning, as I was digging through some older pieces on this from, quote, credible sources, as in sources that people who are normies would tend to believe. This is one here that came from Yale University over in the US, and this was published back in 2019. So this is 5 years old, this piece, and the headline says, geoengineer the planet, question mark. More Santa say now, it must be an option. Human intervention with climate system has long been viewed as ill-advised and risky. But with carbon emissions soaring, initiatives to study and develop geoengineering technologies are gaining traction as a last resort. So this was 5 years ago. And it goes on to say here, this is Yale University saying, once seen as a spooky sci-fi, geoengineering to halt runaway climate change is now being looked at as a real thing. And they go on to say that Cambridge University and Harvard University have dedicated units to investigate spraying the atmosphere with sulfates to bring about a cloud cover to stop solar radiation. It's not a sci-fi thing. This has been bandied about in the public domain for quite some time now, and it's only now beginning to bed in, I think, and people are starting to wake up and smell the coffee.
It's like everything you see. I think we all know at some level or another the technology we are told is available out there, generally technology. We know there's a good chance the military are decades ahead in terms of what they can do and achieve. Now, if people want to see it ever, it's out there. I've got a patent list from the 1890s showing modification technology. 1890s. So if for a minute people think that this hasn't been deployed and used, I think they've really got to look into it a little bit further. As well as the RAF, you know, we know that through the release of military documents, they were cloud seeding over Linton and Lynmouth and caused some severe flooding back in, what, the 1950s or 60s, something like that. And also, you know, there's countries that have threatened to go to war with each other because they're accusing each other of cloud seeding, causing flooding, ruining crops. It's used as a weapon. And a number of global governments have recognized that. That's the cloud seeding side. They seem to be quite open about that. But what they're not talking about are the other things that have been taking place to manipulate and control the weather, as well as what is the fallout of that on soil health, human health, animal health, and so forth. And this is why we've got to get a line drawn under it and get a little bit of accountability, because we've seen what's happened with the weather this year. We see what's happening now. If I personally believe this has been intentional, because they're not exactly fans of the human populace. And if we haven't got food, we can't eat. And seeing that crops of, I think something like 28% of spring crops have been sown, we've lost huge potato and carrot harvesting opportunities. Israel's just flying in a bunch of carrots for us now. The reality is, I think this has been done intentionally. And as a result, I think we'll get some food shortages. We'll certainly see a big hike in food prices later this year. So from a PFFA point of view, get your food in the ground, plant potatoes. You can live on potatoes. Get it in, get it done, find your local suppliers. The supermarkets aren't going to help us out. And the stockpiles in the UK are lower than I think they've probably ever been, aside from the end of World War II, possibly. But yeah, it's pretty grim.
Yeah, last week as well, we're reporting on Tesco's profits in the last year, up 2.3 billion, up from 885 million. So when Tesco say every little helps, they really mean it, but they're not talking about helping you or helping me. It's helping their profit margins and helping their share price go up. Now, I know people could be listening in on this. Some people will listen in and say, you know what, she's bang on the money. I agree with everything Catherine says. Other people could be skeptical and say, well, who is this woman anyway? She's not a scientist. She's talking about this. She's not qualified. You know that old matter, you're not qualified. So let's set you to the side just for 1 minute. Let's set me to the side just for 1 minute. And let's look at an eminent scientist who's actually coming out with this bunkum himself. So this chap here in this article that I'm referring to from Yale back in 2019, time is no longer on our side. A geoengineering advocate, former British governmental chief scientist, Dr. David King, said. So you could say he's qualified, couldn't you? You could say he's got the credentials, couldn't you? So what does he say? He says, what we do over the next 10 years will determine the future of humanity for the next 10,000 years. King helped to secure the Paris Climate Agreement in 2015, but he no longer believes that cutting planet warming emissions is enough to stave off disaster. He's in the process of establishing a Center for Climate Repair, repairing the climate at Cambridge University. It would be the world's first major research center dedicated to the task that he says is an absolute necessity. So a lot of this stuff, Catherine, has been going on, has been documented, has been happening at the highest levels of, quote, science, unquote, but yet most people are completely unaware of it. And now that it's being filtered out, it's going to be spun that it's to save the planet, whereas in reality, I believe it's to engineer the food supply and demand that they will ultimately control, because they say if you control the food, you control the people. It's as simple as that. Maybe I'm just looking too much into it, but that's what old Rick Munn sees this morning.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you. And then you've got to look at who said that. That was Kissinger. And look at what he did. And if people don't know, then please do go and see what Henry Kissinger did whilst he was alive. But I've spoken with a number of different scientists over the year. I started back in 2014. I've looked across the board. I recently did an interview on the PFFA YouTube channel, People's Food and Farming Alliance YouTube channel. You'll find it conducted between Charles Dowding and a scientist who's been looking at this from before I was looking at it, back into the early noughties, I think he was. And he's now created technology that can mitigate the impacts of geoengineering. It's incredible to watch. I've seen him deploy it live 3 times. Didn't believe it the first 2 times, thought it was coincidence, but there's only so many coincidences. There are things that are coming. And what is exciting is that the people are taking this into their hands to find the solutions. However, what we need to do is find a way to have these planes grounded, make sure they're no longer dispersing the metallic particulates and chemicals that they are dispersing, and what that impact is on human health and the soil and so forth. And to anyone out there who doesn't want to necessarily believe this is happening, may I ask you to get your soil tested for metallic particulates, and you'll probably be very shocked as to what you're going to find in there. A lot of these, including things like arsenic and mercury and aluminium that we know have an impact on human health, mental and physical, have been found in quite large numbers. When you look at the trees dying back some years ago, you go and look at the particulates found on those. It's happening. It doesn't matter whether people believe it or not, but the more they spray, the more they wake people up. So I'm afraid they're kind of digging their own grave at the moment. But we've got to keep pushing forward with growing food as best we can, because they want to control the food supply. That is blatant. That is obvious. And by utilizing geoengineering to destroy crops and ruin the ground so farmers can't get on with their tractors or whatever to harvest or sow, we've got to do it at community level. We've got to do what we can to mitigate the impact of this. I see it as temporary because I know we win this, and we're not too far off the end game now. But until then, we've still got to get our heads down, still got to get our food hubs up and running. And again, for those who don't know what a food hub is, go and look on the People's Food and Farming Alliance YouTube channel. You'll find a number of different interviews we've done recently that explains what a food hub is and why it is so important. And we want everyone to get involved.
We'll finish actually talking about solutions, okay? But just before we get to the solutions, if you were to do a word association game, okay, a conspiracist word association game, when it comes to geoengineering, most people will say chemtrails, and then people will say, that's crazy. They're not spraying the skies with poisons. That's just lunacy. Just to put this one to bed, okay, again, from this article, from an eminent ex-British medical scientist, Harvard University, Cambridge, they're all in this. This is what they say. This is in this article, okay? So what they're saying is technologies earmarked for the Cambridge Research Centre, Cambridge University in England, include a range of efforts to restrict solar radiation from reaching the lower atmosphere, which includes spraying aerosols of sulfate particles into the atmosphere. That's what we're talking about right now. So for the people that are dismissive of that, say that it's a thing of fantasy, it's just a lunatic thought, it's not. It's there in black and white from, and when I say a credible source, I'm not giving these people credibility, but what I'm saying is if you want to present this type of evidence to convert people that think you're crazy, the best thing to do is use it from the horse's mouth. Say, well, these are Cambridge scientists. This is a Cambridge University Research Center. They're telling us they did this back in 2019. And of course, you can go back further than that. So people, the evidence is out there. And that's why I wanted to talk to you about this one this morning, Catherine, because the evidence is there, okay? And the results, the results are there too. Now I look up and if I see those big streaks that aren't going away in the sky and they spread out slowly, I know I'm going to get 3 days of milky white, gray nastiness hanging over my head and a little bit of depression setting in as a result of the sulfates being sprayed into the atmosphere. I'm not crazy, am I? Or am I? Maybe I've been sniffing the sulfates. What do you think?
I think it's an onslaught. I think they want us feeling like rubbish. Now, that's physically and mentally. What we have to remember is there's a severe lack of vitamin D as a result of this, mm-hmm. and that will have an impact on our well-being, mental or physical. For me personally, apart from taking additional vitamin D supplements, what I tend to do is remember that they're doing this to weaken our mojo, to make us feel, you know, a bit sad, a bit down, lacking in the vitamin D. So that just drives me further to be happier and more excited about the future. It really is down to where you see it impacting your life and what difference you can make. But raising awareness is key because the pressure that needs to be applied. I mean, how do you down planes? There's no simple answer to that. There's nothing. What we need is exposure, very much the same as everything else, and people waking up and realizing. And I think if farmers, or when farmers, feeling very optimistic, realize that the reason they're struggling so bad is intentional. And I absolutely believe that with all my heart. I'm hopeful that that will give them some impetus to let their voices be heard. And our farmers need to start dealing directly with the public. I know, you know, all of this is interconnected with the usual bad actors like your WEF and your WHO and everybody else. And we know that the supermarkets predominantly are tied up with these organisations. So let's take them out of the picture and start dealing more directly. The solutions are there, but farmers are going to need help this year, big time, practical and economical.
Let's just look at this business, okay? Let's assume the government come out today and admit all this, to say, look, there is a plot, we're doing this, we're doing that. What can people actually do? I mean, like, as you've said, you can't take the planes out of the sky. You know, we're not going to recommend that you go onto eBay and buy some surface-to-air missiles that Zelensky's been flogging off at $10,000 a pop and take out a plane that you think is spraying us with sulfates. No, we don't advocate that at all. But what can people do? Is there any organizations that's dedicated to pressurizing government to look at, I don't know even how you would say this, to admit it, to restrict it? How do you even go about doing something about this? Because it's literally something that you're pretty powerless about when you look up there and you see it and you're thinking, bam, I know what they're doing, but what can I do to stop it? What can we do?
I think first off, write to your MP. Again, put it on their radar. They've got a job to do. They probably won't respond. They probably won't do anything, or they'll give you the party line. Doesn't matter. Apply pressure at numbers. That's a key one. Another thing that's really interesting is, I'm going to be sharing a lot more on this soon, but the gentleman who has created the technology that mitigates the impact of the geoengineering will be doing a public Zoom with some members of the public that come forward. This has to be done in a very ethical, moral way. This technology is pretty powerful. And as such, it could be used in a way that wasn't conducive with peaceful living. We're not the bad guys, we're the good guys. So it's very particular about who's allowed to have this technology and deploy it. But they've got people across the world now working as a team in a coordinated way to attack back. So do know there are really good people out there taking very extreme and positive action to mitigate the impacts. And in the coming weeks, we will be doing a Zoom on this so that people can understand. You'll also then understand what you can do using electroculture and other means to help your crops grow, to help your food grow, and to protect it from the impacts of the geoengineering and the particulates that come from that. But definitely get onto your MP. I know there's a couple of people who are going through the courts in private cases about this, but we also, having seen previously what went on with this situation, understand that that doesn't always come to fruition, but they're still going to pursue it. But I would encourage everyone to help get people awake and get them writing to their MP. Really apply the pressure, guys. Do it via social media, do it via your local MP. Really apply the pressure. This has to stop. And the sooner that we all step up and again have our voices heard, play our part, we will get this ended. But yes, we will be sharing more on the technology. The point being, we shouldn't have to, but we will be sharing more on the technology that's out there that mitigates the impact. And I've seen it myself, like I say, three times. It's incredible how quickly it will clear.
You know, to end on a positive note here, I do believe that this is now starting to bed in under the cracks are starting to appear in the plaster with this one, the way they have done with the whole EV, moving the green vehicles by 2030, that narrative's crumbling and falling apart like so many. I believe that this one will be the next one to fall, or at least one of the next ones to fall. In case I don't do this, and I would have, I'm glad we're focused on this one particular issue here this morning, because I think it needed to be focused on. But there's so many other things that you're involved with, Catherine. One of which, in particular, I'll steer people towards the People's Food and Farming Alliance. You can follow them on X or Twitter, call it whatever you want, at PFFA_UK, and they also have a website in case you don't use social media platforms. PFFA.org. And if you go on there and check out what they're doing, you also have the People's Health Alliance as well, looking at how to take care of your body too. It would have been nice to dip into that a little bit too. But listen, time is our enemy, not just the World Economic Forum, not just the devil, but time itself is our enemy, because we only have a certain amount of it here. So I just want to thank you massively for taking time out of your day to come on here and speak so passionately and so informatively about this particular topic. And hopefully, if it hasn't hasn't been too traumatic for you. We'll talk about it again sooner rather than later, because, you know, maybe this is an omen, but the skies have just, the snow stopped. I can see blue skies and I even seen a bird flying across the sky without any trails coming from its backside. So I'm going to take that as a win and an omen, if you like, that better days are ahead. So thank you so much to Catherine McBean. I'm Rick Munn, and this has been Locked and Loaded. Stay tuned for more. The Freeman Report is incoming. I'll be back on tomorrow morning from 11 to 1 as normal. Stay tuned for more magic here on TNT, Today's News Talk.